Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. And on today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at account takeover and PII data. Now, to help me with this episode, I've got Robert Capps, who is the VP of Market Innovation at New Data Security, and Tim Sloan, who is the VP of Payments Innovation at Mercator Advisory Group. Now, during this episode, we're going to be taking a specific look at basic versus sophisticated fraud attacks, and we're going to be breaking down some of the tactics of each of those types of attacks, and what organizations can do to better help protect themselves. So there's certainly a lot of great information to take away from this episode. So without any further delay, let's start the show.
So account takeover is a major vector of fraud today, and it's growing rapidly. That huge volume of personally identifiable information is being released annually into the wild, and data dark web is a huge driver of it. One estimate I saw was there's 4 billion records released just this year in personally identifiable information. And this personal data is then used to take over online accounts, including merchant banks, streaming sites, and mobile accounts. And so it's becoming easier and easier for criminals to be able to hack in, but they're also becoming much more sophisticated. A recent estimate was that merchants in 2018 lost $13 billion in losses due to account takeovers, and that's likely to get worse as the criminals become more active and smarter in the way they operate, using sophisticated tools to start to perpetrate their crimes.
So Robert and Tim, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. So one of our favorite ways to kick off our discussions here on the episodes is to unpack data for our audience. Now, we do have a chart that is provided to us. And for those of you who are following along on paymentjournal.com, you can view that in the slider above or in the article below. So let's take a look at the chart. And the chart explains that we're looking at a comparison between basic versus sophisticated fraud attacks over time. So Robert, when you see this chart, what jumps out to you? And can you offer our audience some kind of basic definitions around what we're talking about when we say basic versus sophisticated attacks?
Yeah, sure. So thanks for having me on the program today. Happy to join you guys. Definitely a longtime listener of your guys' podcast. So the difference between basic and sophisticated attacks really comes down to how the attack is being presented to the target. A lot of what we talk about account takeovers has to do with consumer data being utilized to log in to accounts. So in the case, you know, as we were talking about the amount of data that's been stolen so far this year, and I'll pause there for 1 second and put a side note out there, we really do have to assume that every consumer who's in the United States and most consumers outside of the United States, that their data has been stolen in some way, shape, or form at some point over the last 5 to 10 years. So with that expectation that all consumer data is out there, it's only a matter of time before that data is used to attempt to log into a valid account. And so one of the things that we've been seeing over time is that the consumer data, when stolen, is often blasted out across many different consumer-facing websites, from financial services to e-commerce, service providers, email providers, you name it, looking for overlapping accounts. So Robert Capps' account at Facebook versus Robert Capps' account at Target or Amazon or on Wells Fargo, looking to see if the credential, username and password associated with me, is in use at any of those high-value websites. In the case of our customers, the basic versus sophisticated account attacks that we're seeing are really focused in on, are they trying to emulate a human, or are they just basically opening the floodgates and flooding as many websites as possible with the same data as quickly as possible, looking for overlapping accounts that they can access? So the basic attack really is, there's no real thought put into how the automation's placed, and how the attack is formed before it's sent off to a website. It's high volume. They don't try to hide their IPs. They're not really honoring things like device ID. They're not rendering JavaScript. In a lot of cases, they're not even loading and rendering the pages themselves. They're just sending data to the form submit address in the same format that a legitimate page would, and they're doing it as quickly as possible. So we see high volumes of traffic coming in all at once, which is not indicative of a normal consumer interaction. We're seeing a lot of data that doesn't work, a lot of usernames and passwords that just don't match that website. We're not getting device IDs. We're not getting any human interaction. All the bells and whistles that would be going off around automation are present in our systems as we're observing these interactions. And frankly, they're really obvious if you know the signals to look for. Now, that's what most organizations have been dealing with for the last few years. And as most organizations have now deployed bot mitigation techniques at the page level, at the network level, even at the content distribution level, those attacks are largely ineffective against most organizations. And that's caused the fraudsters to step up their game. At this point, the sophisticated attacks we're starting to see across our customer base and growing every single month. And if you look at the chart, you'll see that month over month, it's almost a linear growth month over month as we see most of the automation moving from basic attacks to sophisticated attacks. The sophisticated attacks, they don't come from the same IP more than a couple of times. The velocity, the number of transactions from those IPs are, you know, tens of seconds apart or minutes apart or hours apart before they move on to a new IP. They're generating valid device IDs. They're executing JavaScript. There's a page being rendered in the browser. All the telemetry that we would normally collect in a page that we're interacting with for our customers to help protect them is generating data that we can analyze and we can provide back scores and value to our customers on. And so the level of sophistication gets past a lot of the tools that are out there today that do automation detection and mitigation at the network level, at the CDN level, even at the server level. And so these techniques are very effective against most of the organizations that have only deployed rudimentary bot detection. And so what we're seeing now is that as these fraudsters are realizing these more sophisticated attacks are now being successfully launched against organizations that have basic protections, they're starting to move those attacks around and see where else they're effective. In the case of our customers, they're not very effective, and we're catching the vast majority, overwhelming majority of those transactions. But there are enough organizations out there that don't have that protection that they are they're successful to a large margin.
Yeah, Robert, you know, I like your split there between the basic and smart attacks. So in that brute force attack, it's a low cost, low return, and the merchants are getting smarter, banks are getting smarter and able to prevent it. And the crime is now moving to organized crime, even state actors, where they're using AI and other tools. And it's therefore a lot higher cost, but they're finding way more complex ways to drive profit out of those attacks on their payout strategies. So the attacks are getting more sophisticated, and so are the payouts.
Yeah, I mean, the ecosystem of attacks have always been rather sophisticated where those attacks, sophistication is required. You know, I have a history of actually being a practitioner in the space and worked for a very large event ticket marketplace many years ago. And we ran into a lot of situations where the attackers actually outsourced. So there was the one, you know, there was the organization that would collect the credentials and would verify them against the account. Then they would sell them to another organization that would log in and take stolen credit cards they bought from a third organization and create the account or log into the accounts and transact. And then once those products were received, they had another organization that was great at fencing them and recovering value. And so this coordination between actors that are very sophisticated and very specialized results in a very quick and effective turnaround of fraud transactions and monetizing them, right? It isn't just about getting the goods. You got to do something with the goods too in order to get value. A big screen TV that's stolen from, you know, a large electronics retailer online isn't being shipped to Russia. It's being resold somewhere within the, you know, the United States, and those funds are then being remitted back to the fraudsters in other countries. That requires boots on the ground. That requires a sophisticated set of attackers that are often affiliated with criminal organizations.
Right. Lots of mules.
Very much so.
No, excellent. I think that's certainly very interesting. And now, if we could, I'd like to get in kind of to one of my favorite topics, especially when we're talking about fraud here, and that's the specific tactics that are being used here. And we'll get to sophisticated in a bit. And I know that both Tim and Robert, you were kind of, you know, discussing some of the tactics here, but I'd really like to kind of hone in now on just some of the statistics that you're seeing being used when we're talking about the basic fraud attacks. So Robert, if we could start with you, what are you seeing in the industry when it comes to just the tactics of basic fraud attacks?
I mean, the tactics of basic fraud attacks don't change a lot from year to year. Their effectiveness does. I think that the most telling thing we've seen about basic attacks is they're more of recycling efforts. They're taking data that's old, they're taking data that's known to have been used, and they're just using these techniques to see what few remaining bits of data are still getting through the gauntlet of anti-fraud technologies and bot mitigation technologies. And what they get out of it is just a bonus, right? This is just dead data that they're going to throw away. They get 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 or 100 transactions out of it, out of a few million records. That's a bit of a success. And with dumb automation, very basic attacks, there's no cost to getting those additional transactions. Now, from a data perspective, we're still seeing about 30 to 40% of our attacks in that basic category. The November numbers aren't quite done yet for release on our side, but they're looking to be, still about 10 or 20% of the basic attacks are still flowing through our customers to very little degree of success or potential success, but we're still seeing it, right? And so it's effective somewhere, so they're continuing to try.
The criminals have large motivation, high margins. And so with those low-cost attacks, you can expect them to keep at it no matter what. It doesn't cost anything, and it's easy to do.
So now, Robert, obviously at New Data Security, you're obviously able to get insight into kind of the specifics in terms of just what's going on with the basic versus the sophisticated here. Could you give us some kind of point blank examples that you've seen in the industry of basic and then also sophisticated fraud attacks?
Yeah, so I can speak to two cases around ATO just last month, just before the Thanksgiving break, which is a time that's always pretty busy with ATOs. In one case, we saw almost 4 million fraudulent login attempts to a large retailer. And they were trying to access, almost 750,000 accounts. So you saw a lot of overlap of the same accounts being logged into multiple times, which is kind of interesting. And it shows a lack of good data on the part of the attacker. They were, they hadn't cleaned their data up for duplicates, and so there's a possibility of, because there's so many copies of the same data, locking accounts out by trying to access them more than once with a different password. They're coming from about 250,000 IPs, so in general they were, they're doing 10 or so transactions per IP, maybe a little bit more. They're coming from 217 different geolocations. We were catching almost 100% of these transactions because, they were coming in very fast. There was a high velocity per IP. There wasn't a lot of time between attempts. There was a lot of the same account being logged into multiple times. They were rendering JavaScript. They were rendering things like the whole page, and they were populating the information, what appears to be a headless browser, Phantom JS or maybe Firefox or Chrome headless, where you can actually script data being pumped into one of these browsers without it actually rendering. It renders it all in the background and completes JavaScript rendering and does device IDs and collects telemetry and passes it back just like a normal user would. But in all of this, you know, we were also able to identify that the attacker had a high degree of sophistication in manipulating the variables, but they just weren't careful about the data that they were sending, nor were they careful about the velocities. And so at the end of all of that, almost 4 million login events, they only successfully accessed about 1,500 accounts. And those accounts were high enough risk that we passed them on to our customer, and they were able to mitigate those transactions using their downstream risk engines. And so, you know, really taking that funnel from 4 million login events down to less than 2,000, you know, questionable transactions that needed to be further followed up, that was a huge success for the customer. And this was not a super sophisticated attack. When we get into the sophisticated attacks, this is where they're coming in with a lot less volume. They're starting with less data. So in this case, we saw about 26,000 login events that were high risk within this customer from the same attack source with just under 25,000 accounts. They had very few overlapping accounts. So that was a clean data set. It was very precise. It was very focused on this one merchant. They had increased their IPs to almost 1,500. And we were detecting these guys as automation. We knew there was automation presence. And what was interesting is that we presented about 24,000 CAPTCHAs to the 26,000 events. They were all solved correctly. And as we were reviewing this interaction, what we were recognizing was that these CAPTCHAs were being taken from the device where the page was being rendered and the login was occurring, and they were being passed off to a second device where a human actually solved them. So this was a great example of how humans and computers interact to deal with countermeasures from organizations. Those CAPTCHAs being solved correctly led us to understand that there was actually a human farm at play. And I don't know if you're familiar with human farm activity, but effectively it's a human farm is a call center like office somewhere in a developing country where people are employed sitting at computers to place orders and to create accounts and to solve CAPTCHAs. And in this case, you know, they solved those CAPTCHAs at a high degree of accuracy. And we were able to mitigate that 26,000 accounts down to a handful, about 280 to 300 accounts that needed to be reviewed by our customer because they were so close to the margin of fraud, not fraud. So if you think about this, without the traditional bot deflection technologies working, which they weren't in this case, and without our product in place, this customer would have had to deal with about 24,000 fraudulent logins and the resulting transactions. We were able to, you know, through the detection of the human and computer interactions, automation, human farm, through the detection of velocity, through our ability to identify high-risk activities, we're able to call that down to just a fraction of a percent of the transactions for our customers. So, you know, without the proper techniques and tools, most organizations will be drowning under these volumes of attack.
Oh, perfect. Now, Robert, when we speak with your client success team and hear frontline anecdotes of sophisticated fraud attacks, what are some of the commonalities between these sophisticated attacks that you're seeing?
You know, a lot of cases we're starting to see the blending of human and non-human interactions. That the CAPTCHA example we talked about a minute ago, where when the transaction was identified as non-human, that a human was brought into the mix to be able to try to resolve that transaction back into the normal transaction flow. We're seeing a lot of that now. In the case of the upcoming holiday shopping season, previous years we've released reports around ATO and creation of fraudulent new accounts and the resulting fraud after Black Friday. We're seeing same patterns this year that we've seen in previous years, just more volume. The fraudsters have created accounts or logged into and taken over accounts in the past. They're letting those accounts age and sit, and then they come back around Black Friday or Christmas time, after Black Friday, and they try to transact when the volumes are high and they know merchants are looking at fewer transactions. And largely without protection by solutions that look at the account login history and they look at account verification testing history, largely those transactions often get through at this time of year for merchants that don't have sophisticated protections. And so we're seeing a resurgence of that again. You know, that starts in the late summer, early fall, and culminates, you know, the week before Christmas as the largest volume of transactions are pushed through the system. But we're seeing a lot more sophistication around emulation of browsers and actually rendering pages before submission of forms. So we think that there's a lot more headless browsers in use. We believe that there's a lot more human farming activity in use. We're starting to see patterns. We have been seeing patterns of human creation of accounts and human interactions with those accounts to commit fraud. But we see the same human over and over and over submitting forms and orders and registrations for different consumers each time. And so that at scale is starting to become a problem for a lot of merchants as well as financial institutions who are making their services available online but don't have sophisticated tools in place to detect fraud.
Yeah, that's another great reason for having a large network of companies that you're supporting. Being able to collect data from all those endpoints can inoculate the all of the participants that are using new data. So it's a really good methodology for protecting all of your accounts and all of your customers through a centralized structure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That visibility across the large number of customers and their transaction volumes has really helped us protect organizations as a whole, because what we see is that leading organizations often take the brunt of new attacks. And then when those attacks are successful, the fraudsters know that people downstream or down market aren't prepared for those attacks yet. And as the big guys inoculate themselves, the big guys provide new techniques, new rules, new modeling to mitigate those threats, they know the other guys haven't, the other participants in the market haven't enacted those things, so they know they're going to be successful. And so they will hit those organizations fast and hard to get as many transactions through before that technique is completely burned. With our solution, with our technology, you know, we definitely are able to take that information and protect our other clients before they become victims. So it is a really, that consortium level of you know, organizational inoculation is really effective.
All right, so Robert, for the last question here of this episode, how do you think companies can prevent the sophisticated attacks that we've talked about today?
Well, I mean, simply they have to get more sophisticated. That's just the way it is. As the fraudsters become sophisticated, the targets need to become sophisticated, and the days of just deploying device and basic, you know, device ID and basic bot detection and mitigation, those days sadly are over. You know, those are great techniques. They're great technologies to have in your toolbox, but it's time to add additional behavioral, passive biometric, and other technologies to the toolbox to really hone in on where this fraud is coming from and to identify it with a higher degree of accuracy. So to make a long answer really short, the sophistication needs to be increased at target institutions so that they are no longer losing the millions and millions of dollars that they see in losses in the fourth quarter every year.
And part of the challenge there is to bring some of these sophisticated solutions down market to the smaller merchants can be challenging because each merchant has its own processes that they operate, their own systems and their own structures, and their own profit loss statements and margins. And so finding the right fit can be a challenge as you go down market, but they better do it.
They don't have the same problems. Yeah, I agreed. Yeah. They don't all have the same problems. So it's, you know, there's no one size fits all in this market at all. Yeah. You know, Park that works great in financial services, the top 50 institutions may not work so great at the credit union level.
Right.
And the thing happens in the merchant community.
Agreed.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Robert and Tim, for taking the time today for speaking to me about basic and sophisticated fraud attacks. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you, Ryan.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.